In the Old Testament, there's a situation where a prophet has a message for a king, and he disguises himself and tells him about a man who in battle was charged with the responsibility of a prisoner, and the cost of being unfaithful with that charge and losing the prisoner was his own life. And so he told this to the king, and the king says, well, he obviously should forfeit his life. And then the prophet says, well, takes off the disguise and says, you are the man. You've been unfaithful in God's charge. And so in 1 Kings 20:40, we have the little verse that maybe you've heard describing the man on the battlefield who tried to justify the loss of the prisoner by saying, and as he was busy, or as I was busy here and there, he was gone. So the man, as he got busy with various things, his prisoner took off. There are two possibilities of why he lost his prisoner. One is he may have become busy by distractions and just involved with the little things that come along and lost sight of his objective and lost his prisoner. The other possibility is he used his busyness as an excuse not to fulfill his mission and an objective. And so he justified him with the easier thing and did that and lost his prisoner. So we don't know why, but the fact is he lost his life because he didn't accomplish his objective in that particular situation. And that's 1 Kings 2:20, or rather 20 verse 40. Now this workshop, we assume all of us are involved in planning. We know that. We know you know a lot about planning and scheduling. And so we hope that you'll get some new information and ideas that you also, we hope, will be stimulated as we have been to pick up some things we've done in the past or revamp a little bit, just a new heart to get a little more efficient in use of time. And so we hope and pray that it will happen. With regard to busyness, Doss used to say that desire is no substitute for activity, and activity is no substitute for production. Desire is no substitute for activity. Activity is no substitute for production. Ephesians 5 is a good passage. And there aren't many passages in the Bible about the use of time directly, but it certainly is. And as you probably recall, Ephesians' first three chapters are pretty much our inheritance and position in Christ. And then the last three is our production in Christ, or our application for the thing we have. And in chapter 5, he's talking about our being enlightened, that we can think better. And he gets to the point in terms of time in verse 15. In Ephesians 5:15, he says, look carefully then how you live or walk, not as unwise men, but as wise, that is, enlightened men, making the most of the time, because the days are evil. Therefore, do not be foolish, but understand what the will of the Lord is. Now we have two parameters, or two guidelines, that'll help us in the use of our time. One of them is the mind that God has given, the enlightened mind. We have a responsibility to think and to make decisions on the use of our resources, whether it be our physical resources, our gifts, our money, our time. Proverbs 16:9 says, a man's mind plans his way. All right, now that's right. The other perimeter, or the other limitation or guideline, is the will of God. And that's what he says here, to understand the will of the Lord. So think with enlightened mind and know the will of God. The general will of God, thou shalt not and thou shalt. Now these are two extremes. We know what the will of God is in these areas. Now in between there are principles for discerning the will of God for us individually in our time and history and our place and our personality. So we can know the will of God. And we can think well enough with enlightened minds to make good decisions on the use of our time. So we have some responsibility. A man's mind plans his way. Now the other, he balances that off by saying, but the Lord directs his steps. As we plan, the Lord gives decisions and guidance as to how his plans unfold and work out. And can correct and guide beyond that. One time when Joy and I had an opportunity to stay a couple of days after a conference, we got the apartment up here in the castle. And about every year we review our objectives and schedule and so on, and it was a good time. But in this year, as we went through our objectives and activities and our timetable, kind of the long-term schedule coming up, and then got to our daily and weekly schedule, we tried to plug in the activities, and there just was not enough time in the week to do it. And we'd redo it, throw it away, and draw it again, you know, think maybe somehow we're not drawing it right, or we're missing something. And we just couldn't fit them all in. So I finally said, I know what we ought to do. A 7-day week won't do it. Let's go to 12 days in a week. And we did, and it really helped. You know, we put a few more lines on there, and it was amazing what a 12-day week will do in terms of loosening things up. Well, you know what we did? We went on a 2-week schedule and dropped out the days off and gave us 12 days to work with. And that was quite a change for us because I had been in the habit of doing almost everything on a weekly basis. And to do some things on a bi-weekly basis, man-to-man or a meeting or that Bible study, so on, discussion was a thing. And yet we finally had to do that. And so as we thought about it and worked on it, we decided that was what was right. And the Lord confirmed that. We went back and it was a little adjustment to some of the gang. Who were used to meeting with us on a weekly basis, man to man. And one couple was a little offended. Most of ours were singles that time. I was surprised that it was a couple that thought, you know, we're really letting up here. But anyway, we felt it was right and worked along that line. So a man's mind plans his way, but the Lord directs his steps. So this discussion now that we'll get into will be on our responsibility to plan. And the way that, before I have some prayer, we've decided to do it is that Bob Sparks and Chuck Ailes are going to participate. Bob is going to concentrate on us putting together common difficulties we run into in planning. Some of you filled out a little survey that we ran here before the conference began, and he'll summarize that for us. Chuck is going to kick it off on his section on some things he does in scheduling and planning, and then Bob will show us what he does. And feel free to comment and share in the midst of this time, any place, and we'll work together on it. Okay, any questions now before we get into it? All right, let's pray and we'll begin. Lord, we again, thank you this morning for the beauty of this day and the privilege of having a place like Glenary to enjoy, to use. We thank you for the cooks, the gang who serve in the rooms, all your provision. Thank you for the donors who've given that we might be here to work. I thank you for each of the workshops going on now and pray for our staff participating in each of these that you'll give us guidance, lead us. Pray that each of us will grow because of the investment of these couple hours now. I thank you for the men and women here, and where it's a privilege to work together. Pray that you'll lead us now in Jesus' name. Amen. All right, Bob, please come up, please.
Appreciate the help of those of you that did fill out that little survey and the difficulties that we kind of categorized and listed. We came up with 5 main areas of difficulties. And fortunately, during the coffee break, we came up with a solution for the overall problem of planning and the subject. And the solution is a 5-fold one that will apply to some of us. And the first one is to plan the day. And then the second one is to talk with your wife. And then the third one is to replan the day. And then to talk with your wife again. And then the fifth one is to abandon the whole idea and talk to yourself.
Oh, where did you get that?
But I appreciated that idea with you and Joy. That was a whole idea. Well, The areas we came up with, would you like to volunteer what you think was the most common area of difficulty? If you had to pick one, what do you think it would be?
Difficulty in managing your time.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Probably taking the time to sit down and plan.
That was number two in mention, but probably one and two were about the same in importance. Taking the time to schedule it. No ideas.
Taking the time to stick to the schedule.
Yeah, that was in there too. Uh-huh. The first one, I shouldn't say the first one, but the one mentioned more often than any other, was doing things in order of priority. Yeah, that was number one. Comments like this, doing the easy, enjoyable thing before the difficult or the more important one, you know, this type of thing. Probably under that category, learning to say no to good things. The idea of keeping objectives clear in the midst of the day-by-day grind. I think all of these sort of related to the idea of priorities. Then a second one was already mentioned, planning and scheduling. That seemed to cover quite a variety in people's thinking, anywhere from long-range planning, someone mentioned, you know, 3-5 years, to more frequently mentioned was the week-by-week planning, day-by-day, and areas especially that were difficult to get into the schedule were scheduling time off, scheduling time with the family, and scheduling a standard week. Maybe it's like a normal navigator area. Yeah. Scheduling time for self-development was in there too. Things like getting protracted time with God, evaluating in light of objectives, but all of it was kind of related to the planning and the scheduling idea. And the next one flowing out of that was keeping the schedule. One expressed it this way, staying up with the ordinary in the midst of the special. And, of course, the whole idea of interruptions came in here. And we discussed a little bit in the last hour the idea of those of us that work out of our homes. You know, you're working away and all of a sudden the washing machine breaks down and there's water all over the floor, or the dryer breaks down, or the wife is away shopping and the child falls off the tricycle or, you know, whatever. As well as people coming through or any number of types of interruptions that you might run into. And just keeping with the schedule, a lot mentioned tyranny of the urgent at that point, I think, too. The idea of the important things, or rather the urgent things coming in and usurping the place of the important. Another one that was mentioned pretty frequently was staying on top of the administrative work. I think especially they had in mind their paperwork, finance reports, correspondence, just other administrative things. And then learning to delegate was mentioned a little bit. Those were the major ones. There's a few other that were just occasionally mentioned. Any you'd like to add to the list to help us, or examples of some of these, or you feel it?
One thing on keeping a schedule or all these interruptions, I've been going over to our church quite a bit to work. Mm. And just take them a table down the basement or something. My work there, almost like that being an office on certain days. It gets me out of the house and away from everything that's happening there. And I find that's very helpful.
Good.
The church isn't being used anyway, so they don't mind me being there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, on some occasion I go to the library too. Especially if I've got a big project to tackle, like the family Bible study series or something like that. To work on, need to be away.
Yeah, yeah. One of the things we tried to look at, if you think of others to add to this, feel free to do so, or examples of them. But one of the things we tried to look at too was to what degree are some of these things the problem, and what degree are they just symptoms of a problem? You know, is there something underlying some of these that we're treating the symptoms more than the cause? I think these are the ones that we can actually face and grapple with and maybe do something with, but maybe there's something underlying. Any ideas on that? Yeah. Oh, maybe the question wasn't too well worded. We thought that perhaps some of these here especially might relate just to the area of discipline. Not wanting to just use that as a catch-all excuse or area of need for everything, but certainly discipline is involved in that, and sense of responsibility, as the passage that Warren was sharing brings out. so overall discipline, but of course these are the specific areas with which we can grapple and get a handle on the discipline. You know, I need more discipline in this specific one. But anyway, my job is the easy part of just coming up with a problem. Now somebody else can solve it.
Yeah. Okay, Chuck, you share with us, please.
You can see who's the newest member in the staff in the state of Michigan. I've got to solve all the problems. I like to share what I've done over the years, and I've come out of a professional practice, and I had a job for the governor running a crime commission, which had a lot of pressure and a lot of scheduling responsibilities in addition to the staff. So these are the things that I did to try and keep my head above water. And what I do, I have several principles that sort of I keep tucked away in my mind. And these create the attitudes upon which I go forward in my planning. One thing we decided was that this workshop is unfinished. And it was planned to be that way. Because the key is not what we do, but what you do as a result of the instruction. So we designed it that way. And we'll ask you to sign up a little bit later, your name and address. And we're going to write you in a month. And we're going to ask you for an evaluation. And we're going to ask you what was useful, and we're going to ask you how are you using what you learned, and encourage you to take notes a little bit better. Okay, now one principle that runs through my mind is to avoid the barrenness of busyness. It'll just wipe us out.
Avoid the what?
Barrenness of busyness. The old way of saying it was, when your output is more than your input, your upkeep will be your downfall. We try and run our lives by the MBO, the management by priorities, but as a Christian worker, we do it MBPO, management by priority objectives. And that's how a Christian plans his time, Matthew 6:31. And although we are managed by objectives, it's the love of Christ that compels us, the 2 Corinthians 5:14. And that's the thing that motivates us. We're managed by the facts, but we're motivated by the love of Christ. I think it's very important to know your priorities biblically. To believe them, to know them, and to be tenaciously convinced of them. Because the body of Christ will do their best effort to cause you to violate your own convictions on your priorities. So you need to be firmly rooted on those things. And my priorities are basically my heart, my home, and outside of the home. If we don't plan our time, everybody else will. And now we'll say on the opposite side, one who doesn't plan to plan, plans to fail. One who doesn't plan to plan, plans to fail. And the other thing I keep in my mind is a need is not necessarily a call. So those are some of the thoughts and the principles I keep tucked away in my computer as I go into scheduling, speaking engagements, man-to-man, etc. Well, what do I do? I like the 1-2-3, a do list, and I rank them 1-2-3, and I won't start number 2 until I've got number 1 done. And that is very hard to do. Requires a lot of discipline. Because you see something over here. And what I try to do is keep my desk clean. I don't like a cluttered desk. I keep all the junk behind me on my bookcase. I've got my in file, my out file, and it's all behind me. So I can only see one thing at a time. When a thing requires a response and not just a lot of thought, I'll do it right away. A telephone return, a date to a conference, tell somebody something, I'll just put a postcard. Like we changed the date on a fall conference. I just put a postcard, send it to the staff team, and it's done with. Those kind of things I'll tend to forget. So I do them right away. I carry a memo pad to write down things, and the main reason there is for integrity. Because I'll see someone, and I'll say, well, hey, I'll do this for you. Because my basic heart is to serve the brethren. But then I don't write it down. I'll forget that I said I'd do it. And he's waiting for 2 months for something to be mailed to him. Now this doesn't guarantee you'll get done, but there's a little bit better chance of it. I delegate as soon as possible, and I'll write down the instructions given and the date. Usually on a 3x5. Then I write quarterly objectives. And my main question is Acts 22:10, Lord, what would thou have me do? Mentally, I have a yearly goal, and this year it's Philippians 2:5 to take on the mind of Christ. But I won't put that on paper because year-long objectives, you just send them to your supervisor and then you file them and forget them. A quarterly objectives, I'll keep those current, I'll keep them in front of me, I'll keep reflecting on them. And my whole system is built around those quarterly objectives. And this is something I've developed over the years. Just sort of modified it. And I'll share it now. What I have is each day of the week. Starting at 5 o'clock in the morning, which is usually get up, and then until 9 o'clock at night. And I have this thing planned according to my priorities. The first little box here on the left, I do the bottom part first. And my first is my heart, my relationship with God, the things I want to do because I'm a believer. My scripture memory goal for the week, review. And then I'll put in the box, maybe write and develop training contracts this week. Or whatever.
Where are you, Chuck?
Right down here. We're going to have an overhead in this, but we couldn't get an overhead. So I'm right down here. Like right now, I'm working on a special Bible study in the gospel. It's just a personal study. It's not something I'm doing for work or a Bible study. And I'm asking myself the question, what do I want people to know before they accept Christ? And I'm going through the gospels and reading that. So that's something I put in right here. The next box, it's for my family. A lunch date with Babs, a special time with the kids, thinking on maybe a Bible study plan, the kind of things that get squeezed out so easily because you don't sit down to do them. And then the third and fourth boxes are my ministry, and the fourth one was my regular job. Then I'll go back and I'll take the first thing I want to do in a priority and I'll put that into the schedule. Then I'll put in my time with Babs. Then I'll put in some time with the kids. That's special time. And then I'll put in the rest of the stuff. So what I do then is I force myself to make sure the least important thing gets the least amount of consideration. And this form has helped me to plan by priorities. On my office, I've got an easel with a 3-month calendar on there, and I've got all my man-to-man blocked out in that. I have 5 couples in training. I have 2 businessmen and sort of a little bit of training. And I have a written training contract with all 5 of the couples. We negotiate it out individually. It's not a standard form. And I put in their specific content that I'm going to deliver to them. And then I prioritize the content. This helps me know where I'm going to go in each man-to-man. And if I don't have it planned, we'll sometimes evolve off into fellowship over the word and prayer and need meeting or problem solving, and we'll call it man-to-man, which in fact it is not. So this helps me make sure I'm actually delivering man-to-man time, if I'm going to call it that. So I'll schedule that time in. The other thing I do is I protect Monday. I call it my think day. Prayer and planning. And I'll start it out good in the Word and just me and the Lord. It's my selfish time. It's for me and Him only. And then I'll plan my man-to-mans. I'll think through the things. I'll get my head into where I'm going. And I've told my gang to not bother me on Monday. If they call me, I won't answer them. And I just don't stay away from the home on Monday. If we don't protect our think time, we'll have nothing to give. Because once we start going, we're honking in our taillights. So I really protect Monday and whatever day you want to do, but make sure you build in think time. And right after my commitment to my family, my think time is my next highest priority. And then my next highest priority is my couples I have in a training relationship. Any questions on this little thing? I got a brand new Rapidiograph ink pen, so I drew all the lines on it and stuff. If you don't like lines, then take the lines off. Bob's going to share his. He doesn't have lines on his.
Chuck, do you fill that thing in with every hour? Or do you just put the items in here in order of priority and just let whatever? You may not get through the whole list in one day. Is that...
Yeah, I'll put the items in. I'll put in my schedule man-to-mans the things I have to do in the way of activities. Then I'll go back and put in the prep time off this list down here. Then I'll keep some open time in there and flexibility and stuff and a little relaxed time, jogging and stuff. And of course it's flexible, it'll change a little bit. But at least I'm going the right way and the week starts. Because if we don't plan our time, everyone else will. And it's just a mess at the end of the week and all I have is a big guilty conscience. So it may look like maybe I have a blank here. Monday would be just prep time, it's all I say on it. P&P. Plan and prayer. And Tuesday we start out with some man-to-man, some couples, and a luncheon here, and 2:00 meeting there, and evangelism here, and then it starts looking more like a navigator schedule. Raj?
How do you fill this out, Chuck?
I do it Monday morning.
Monday morning.
Yeah. Technically, my week starts on Monday. Sunday's the tail end. And one of the last gentlemen suggested that we should put Sunday on this side. Because mentally, that's how I think. Monday's the first day of the week for me. But it's just invaluable, and I've learned to guard that thing just tenaciously. Another thing I use this thing for is a time study. You have to know where you've been in order to know whether you want to keep going that way. And I've done 4 of them since I've been on NAV staff. I've been on a year now. And I remember when I first, before I came on staff, I had the idea, and I probably all thought it too, what do these navigators do? Do they just sit around the house and, sip coffee with their wives? Because here I had a law practice and a government directorship and other things, and I just wondered. So I thought I'd take a time study, see where it went, and I was averaging out of 4 time studies, 59.2 hours a week. And all of a sudden I felt, I am being fulfilled as a man, I am working. And another thing, biblically, we probably set more of a model by working in the home under Deuteronomy 6 than you do by working outside of the home, because you can be there and naturally take teaching moments when you lie down, when you sit, when you rise, etc. So don't let the culture tell you you're sort of guilty because you don't work in an office. I've had to wrestle through that thing. And a guy came over and said, well, what do you do with your time? Well, here. Here's four of them. Look at it. And you do all that? See, words are cheap, but if I can put it on a piece of paper and show a businessman, some of the attorneys I work with and stuff, here's what my week is like. And here's what I do. It's visual. It's factual. And they understand. And then they know I'm just not sitting around on my duff. So that's been very, very helpful to me.
You say you take a time study. What do you mean? You take a quarterly, or you just take one a week and use that as an example?
Yeah, whenever I'll probably do one quarterly, and I'll take one of these forms out, and every hour I'll write down what I did. Whether it's man-to-man, counseling, wasted time, jogged, played with the kids, Bible study, you know, whatever we do, I just put down that block increment. Then I got a pretty good flow. And I try and be honest with myself. I find that if I try and do a Bible study for more than an hour increment, I have a tendency to lie to myself. And you have a big block of time like this, you put, you know, it worked in the office. And it shows a 2-hour block and really only worked an hour. So I like to have at least an hour. And preferably, you should do it every 15 minutes to do a time study. Okay, so I get the quarterly objectives. I know where all my man-to-mans are, and my man-to-mans are scheduled for 3 months at a time with every guy I'm training, so they know when I'm going to be there. And then we have to change, we change it. I've got it locked in. All my man-to-mans are scheduled through December now with every key guy I've got. That gives them security, lets them know they're a priority, and it keeps me on target. And then the training contract helps me deliver what I said I would, so I have integrity as a trainer. Let's see. So let's take a situation, someone calls and they want you to speak. Okay? What I generally do is I set, like, I'll speak 3 times each quarter and no more. And usually, like, I spoke for Raj Vinod's sister up in Ludington for Christian Women's Club on their couples night. Now, I enjoy that. I love getting a bunch of men around that are pagans and presenting the gospel, and I just love that. That's my strawberries and cream. And I need to do that every once in a while just to get out and get charged up again. But afterwards, you always get a lot of invitations that, well, could you come speak here and speak there and this kind of stuff. So here's what I do. First of all, I never accept an invitation to speak anywhere if it's for within 48 hours. I automatically turn down a request if it's to be done within 48 hours. That tells me they have not planned, and I'm not going to bail them out of their dilemma. With my quarterly objectives, I know exactly where I'm going. I know what God has said, this is what I want you to do this quarter. And since I know where I'm going, I can tell what's a detour. Some of the guys before said they never carry an appointment book. Because you tend to make an emotional response because you love the brethren. Boy, I'd love to come speak there and encourage your brethren and fire them up on evangelism. And so you make a commitment to do it, and you get back home and you look at your calendar and you realize that's the heaviest week there is. And then the problem we find is it's easy to set an appointment, but the problem is the preparation time. And that's what kills us off. And then we blow our priorities. So what we should suggest they do is, I'll never say yes on the spot. I will say no on the spot. But I'll never say yes. My general thing is I'll call you back in 2 hours. I'll call you back in 2 days. I want to pray about it. And I want to ask the Lord, what would thou have me do? Then I'll get back to him within 2 days. After I've checked out my priorities. And this kind of thing. By having my calendar all plotted out for the 3 months, or the month ahead of my wife and my children, let's say someone calls and, boy, they got this special thing, and they'll call me for evangelistic rallies, because that's what I love to do. And so that night's my family night. And someone in some other ministry calls, or some little team leader somewhere's got me coming over for that. And I've promised Carrie I'm going to take her down to Miller's Ice Cream Shop for a Sunday, and it's been a promise for 3 months now. All I have to do is say, I'm sorry, I'd love to do it, but I've got a prior commitment. And by putting it down on paper, my priorities are protected. and my family knows that they're more important to me than the ministry is. Every once in a while we have to, you know, change that, but they have to know the attitude is there. I'll often ask them to write me and tell me in writing what their objectives are, what the needs are of the group, and what they'd like me to speak on. Because if they don't know what they want, I generally will say, well, you know, that's not within my call. And I also think, who can I take with me to train? I went on a dean's thing the other day. He's working in evangelism and just fit in perfectly what he was doing. I had a guy just ask me a week before to, hey, could you teach me something about evangelism? So I wanted to do the basic principles with him, so I just took him along, and it worked out beautiful and helped Dean do what he wanted to do. I accomplished a couple objectives and everything.
What did you say you asked him to tell you? What are your objectives and what else?
Oh, in the letter? Yeah, I asked him to write down their objectives, the needs of the group, and what they want to accomplish through my speaking. And most guys would say, well, man, do as the Lord leads. You know, I never thought about that. And that tells me, you know, I really need to pray about whether or not that's God's will. Because a need is not necessarily a call. I remember one time I had a chance to speak at 12 churches down in Indiana. And I talked to Bob DeHaan about it. He said, well, Chuck, there's two things you need to remember. There's two things that will kill you off in the Christian life. One is a glorious opportunity, and the other is difficulties. And the other thing he said was, never create a need that someone there can't fulfill. And I didn't know anyone in that town that could create the needs that might have been caused. Of course, I was getting a little proud too about my 12 churches. You know, I was a 2-year-old Christian and wanted to come here. And, wow. So, it's an opportunity for pride, and I turned it down. When I'm on a man-to-man with a guy, and most people I work with are working on jobs, I'll ask him when I first start, when do you have to leave to get back to work? And let me share a little insight here. When I first left the working world, I got some of my working friends in the executive types and said, what do missionaries do that turn businessmen off? And he said, the main thing in the area of the use of time is they're always late. They have no respect for our schedule. It's like we have a 12 o'clock lunch appointment. They call, and I really don't know what they want to come for, but I suspect it's to get money out of me. And then they show up at 12:30. We have lunch, and we have a nice little small talk for about half an hour. And then at 1 o'clock, where my mind should be back at work, and when it starts costing me money, they start suggesting that they might give to me. And so he said, the thing that's very important is to ask a businessman, now when do you need to get back? The other thing he said was, all missionaries seem to do is they want our money, and all they want to do is tell what they're doing. And they never seem to take an interest in what we are or our family. So I just pass it on for what it's worth. And I think the thing there is that we not only want to use our time well, but Philippians 2 verses 3 and 4 says we are to esteem their time as well. And that's very, I think it's very, very important for us. Because we have a very flexible schedule. They don't. And in the business community, we have to be available to them. And I'll go to their office rather than have them come to mine because I can get more time with them. The other thing I found, it seems like in the collegiate and the military ministries, one of the selection tools is the FAT, CAT, you know, the faithful, available, and teachable. What I've sometimes found in the community is that if I find a businessman that is totally available, he's generally a loser. Because if he has any abilities whatsoever, his boss is going to find it out and get that guy busy. So the available guy in the community isn't exactly the guy you're going after. You're going after the ambitious guy who isn't available. And what we have to do is show him the eternal perspective and show him the true riches and the real vision. So just a couple thoughts on that. One thing I do, learn to say no. And nothing is an emergency after 9 o'clock at night. I did a lot of marriage counseling in my law practice, and people would call at midnight sometimes. Boy, I've got this crucial problem. If we don't get help now, and I just say, well, I'll see you 8 o'clock in the morning. That was because they're forcing me to start work tired. So if they want to stay up all night, then they can get up early and come over and see me. The second thing it does, it forces them to turn to the Lord. And the sooner we do that in their times of trial and emergencies and in the wilderness, the better off they're going to be. And I found 80% of the time the people who call with the emergencies at the late hours never show up the next day. They sleep in. So I honestly believe there's no emergencies after 9 o'clock. There might be an exception, but I've not found too many. And that's just the devil keeping up all night. So those are some thoughts. And you got any questions on those things? Or? Okay.
Robert, why don't you share with us what you do?
This is primarily just a little addition or variety to what Chuck has already got so thoroughly, I think, in his notes. And like he said, I didn't have a rapidograph pen to make all those lines with, so I just drew bigger boxes. And as per the suggestion in the other group, I like starting the week with Monday and using it not every week, but especially when things are heavy, to try and get things planned out a little better. Or an idea picked up from Chuck since we got out here is to also use it when the week is not too heavy, so that we make sure we really get something done and not just kind of coast along. I guess one of the main times I've found a form like this helpful is to sort out and spread out into the week the things that are more of a project nature as opposed to a do list nature. I don't know how you operate that, but I haven't quite got on top of the system of writing one thing on my success diary sheet and another on the back of some message notes and another this morning from Jerry White on the back of the placemat, you know. And then pretty soon your now file is filled with all these different size sheets of paper and pencil and pen, and it's too confusing to see what your priorities are there. So I'll gather those all up and put them on a do list, type it up. And then when I do that, I see that some of them are projects and some of them are the short-time things that Chuck was talking about that won't take so much think time or effort. And it's especially helpful to me to just kind of plan the project time in there, like the materials committee thing, to take a day just to work on that. So that's been a helpful thing. Another is just to try and occasionally get a little variety. I would imagine that most of you in this room have all kinds of resources in terms of time management and things that you know, but you just need the impetus and the stimulus now and then to apply those things, to use them. And so one of the things that helps me on that is to get a little variety, like Chuck's sheet, which is different for me. I kind of want to implement some of those. Gene Soderbergh recently got me onto this daytimers thing that some of the guys and gals use. They have it in 8.5 by 11 forms, this size, and a smaller pocket or purse size. Who was it that had one of those last meeting? Was it Jody?
No, it's Brad Cosgrove.
Oh, that was his, huh? I thought it was hers.
Jody's.
I think it's Jody Baker's. Anyway, I was just wanted to mention the name in case you wanted to track it down. But
is just that something that can be bought in a store? You have to order that. Like
I think you have to order it, Pete, from Daytimers, Allentown, Pennsylvania. And they've got a catalog book they'll send you out, and you can look at which size and cost and stuff that you're interested in.
Gary Crane in research, or whatever department she's in, has a catalog and forms over in the office.
Yeah. They've got quite a... They're not cheap. I think economically, probably the success diary is a little more economical, that type of thing. But some people like to use, just like Chuck, just a pad or 3x5 cards. The thing I like about this and the success diary is it's got monthly schedules for you right in there, and then right after the month, some pages for do lists, and then the weekly schedule day by day where you can see Monday to Sunday at a glance, and it does start with Monday. And then in the back, you've got some similar things to a success diary type a place to record finances and an address, name and address thing, and some yearly calendars. This one goes up into the 1980s. The main disadvantage on the address thing is that they're kind of bound in there. You can't put additional sheets in particularly. But just the variety, I find, helps keeping me at it. Let me just mention one other thing, and that is on the list of difficulties here from the surveys we took, it was two sides of one coin. Here's the difficulties, and you ask, okay, what's been the biggest help? Well, the biggest help was planning and scheduling, and priorities were related to that. Planning the month, week, and day, using a calendar, do lists, having deadlines for projects, prayerful planning. But another major that didn't come out on the problems but was a major on the helps from the survey was others helping in our time management. For a lot of the guys, it was planning with their wife and going over the schedule for the week with their wife. That was a big help. Some had administrative assistants or a secretary, and that was a big help. But I felt some of them, from what they said, were referring to just another person in the area who might be a running mate, a gal, a guy that could help them do the planning and scheduling, or maybe somebody who had more expertise in that area, was a little bit more organized in their personality. And that's one I thought that we might not want to overlook. And Warren reminded us of Ecclesiastes 4, 9 and 10, two are better than one. Okay.
Bob and Chuck. Now, do you have any comments at this point? For instance, has it crossed your mind the problem or the consideration of pacing and the difference in personality, rest, relaxation or recreation or exercise, going for the long haul, the Lord willing, next 20, 30, 40 years? Now, how do you fit all that together in scheduling? Any questions along those lines?
Yeah, I'm sort of interested in hearing what some of the guys do in scheduling the exercise time. Mm-hmm. How much and how often? Mm-hmm.
It depends on how young you are.
The older you are, the more time you need to.
Yeah, it takes longer, doesn't it?
It takes longer to warm up and cool down.
I usually like to plan to run every other day, and usually put in about 45 minutes for that by the time I get my clothes, do the running, get back. Mm-hmm.
When do you do that, Doug?
Like
what time of day?
Really about before supper time. Uh-huh. For my metabolism, it seems to be the best time. Plus, it also gives me a boost at the time of the day when I'm probably at my groggiest.
Yeah.
It makes me ready for the evening.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I'd like to hear what someone might say about the evening schedule, how to keep from working 5-6 nights a week. It seems like there's a lot of demands on our evening time. And, and I'd like to find out how to avoid that.
Okay.
I think one way is just being ruthless, just like Chuck said he was with Mondays. He's just ruthless and nothing crowds it out and nothing interferes with it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like for me, Wednesday night is just open because we are busy Monday, Tuesday, and Thursday. So Wednesday night is just not going to be planned. It's going to know is that Wednesday evening, that that's, we're going to have a day, or we're going to have a family night, something like that. But
yeah.
It's good. Just have to plan it, or it won't happen.
What do Leah Brumley have with you start getting your admin, one of the things is saying, if they're staying on top of the admin, I stay on top of it, I want them sitting on top of it. Like it's,
your whole office is filled with it.
I measure it by inches. stuff, and, oh, look at this, that's last year. But just, you know, does anybody have a plan as far as how they do, you know, as far as putting in stuff? And, you know, I've tried a system of priority A, B, C, you know, and putting everything that was A, and I went up with A and B and C. And I still, I think one thing about doing what you can do right away, you know, do that right off the bat.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Does anybody use any kind of a filing system whereby they kind of monitor their workload or a particular system or something like that they found effective? Or,
I've got a little calendar planner thing, probably very much on the order of that diary. But if I get a form that says, you know, this needs to be filled in by the 30th of November, what I'll do is, well, let's say it needs to be at the Glen by the 30th. Well, I flip to the 25th of November and make a note. Or if I need more time to do it, if it looks like a two-day project, I back it up some more and allow plenty of time for it to go through the mail and so forth. But this book I've got, on one side of the page, it's got appointments. So it looks very much like Chuck's sheet here with each hour of the day. It's designed for the guy who doesn't work evening, so you have to modify it a little bit. But then on the other side, I'm sorry, this side is all appointments. So there's my man-to-man appointment and my Bible study and all. On the right side, it's called reminders. And that's where I put these items like, remember to start preparing for the workshop now, for 6 weeks from now. Remember to fill out quite often, well, every August when we get that note saying that our receipts have to be in early in September, you know, I make a note on September 1, just send in that receipts. That seems to help on those items that really have a deadline.
I saw Larry Whitehouse's. He puts every Monday, you know, every Friday afternoon as Navigator paper time. Because it's his least efficient time of the week. He sort of cranked out. And he thinks that's the least important stuff because he just does it then.
I've seen some of his paper.
And I think that's all he does, too. He just does it then, that's it.
That's it.
It doesn't get done.
Yeah. So, one thing that has helped me is both reports or things that will take thought is to go ahead and look it over and try to get well acquainted with it, get oriented to the thing early, and then I put down the date that need to begin to work on it. But if you can just get it into your thinking and understand it clearly, somehow you're conscious of it and things begin to collect around that topic, it gives you a little head start. Then you're not either fearful of it or dread it so much, or you've had a chance to be aware of it so that you're looking for information along that line and so on. Get started early. Same for a message, topic, or preparation. If I can just get a scratch piece of paper and start writing random thoughts down, it's a new message, gets it in the mail. How about the differences? Chuck starts at 5 o'clock. Is that... Everybody starts at 5 o'clock?
Well, not every day.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm at 6 o'clock.
That's because I read the dairy farmer.
I think it's significant, though, it stops at 9.
What's that?
I think it's significant that it stops at 9.
Yeah, okay. Now, what does that tell you? What's that say?
I think it says that each one of us has a little different operating schedule. Some people work best in the morning. You know, I've tried getting up at 5:15 or something like that. I've done it for as long as, I think, 9 weeks one summer. And you know, to give my body plenty of time to adjust, but I just do not function well. I sleep through my quiet times. Mm-hmm. I get up and, you know, I just can't do it then. Mm-hmm. So I shift my day, and I'm generally, you know, working a little later at night and getting up later in the morning.
Mm-hmm. Other comments along the line? How do you do it?
I go better at night too. I can work well from 10 to 12 sometimes. Mm. That's about when I get charged up.
I mean, in the evening, 10 o'clock p.m. to 12 p.m.
Yeah. And sometimes there's not too many distractions then.
Mm-hmm.
And you can really get some work done in the Bible study sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
What time do you get up?
About 7, 6:30. Mm-hmm. I think one comment that I don't like getting up then.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason I do it is in the community ministry, the guy works for a living. It's often the only time he has.
So you, to get time with them, you do man-to-man before breakfast sometime?
Yeah. So I don't take away his family time at night. Mm-hmm. I don't want that meeting out of the home every night.
Right.
I'd rather sacrifice myself and the kids are asleep
mm-hmm.
than to do it at night on their home.
I found the same thing. Oh, a couple of years ago, I had 6 days, 6 mornings that I was out. Never ate breakfast at home. I've come to the conclusion that I'm going to have to do the same thing in the mornings as I've done in the evening. There'll just be some mornings I just won't meet with anybody.
Yeah.
I'm going to be home and have breakfast with my wife.
Yeah.
But I've just seen that just. Plus, you know, if you got one early morning such study with some guys or something, and then have two or three breakfast appointments or whatever, you just never have breakfast at home. Right?
Doug?
I have a question just for anyone to respond to, but it has seemed to me that with the people I'm working with right now, that the as far as evangelism, Bible studies, and so forth, that the evenings are about the only time of the day I can get a 2 or 3 hour block with them. And so I end up working evenings, maybe six evenings a week. You guys probably have much the same thing. You then take afternoon blocks off. I guess it probably depends on whether you've got children at home or children in school as to when you need to be there to see them once in a while. Anybody comment on that as to how you handle it?
Excellent question. Comments, please.
Well, that's when I can get together with single gals is in the evening, so my evenings are primarily ministry.
Mm-hmm.
And I will take an afternoon for personal things and try and schedule it that way.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But I find
excuse me.
The problem I have, having worked in an office on an 8-to-5 job, well, relatively speaking, not an 8-to-5 job, I'm not sure we're going on, but I knew I had made my commitment and put in my full day work. Mm-hmm. It was something I could measure.
Yeah.
And I really struggle with that. Yeah. I just have not got, I fight with guilt
mm-hmm.
if I have free time and I just mm-hmm. don't do anything.
Mm-hmm. Bob?
We were discussing this on the way out and how the way a lot of us work and have to work, we're sort of out of sync with the normal working world. You know, we work at night when they're off, and we're off, or can get time off during the day. And I think Chuck's idea of doing the time study is helpful then, because then we can, without guilt, plan in those times off or for rest or whatever we need, and we realize whether we are or not, you know, really pulling our load time-wise.
Mm-hmm.
Just knowing the facts, I think, of where we are, rather than kind of, it's sort of nebulous, you know, how much time am I putting in on each responsibility?
Pete, you have a comment?
I was just going to ask if it was a pretty common thing. Most of you, periodically someone makes some comment about, wish I could be a navigator and have every day off and this kind of stuff. Just making those kind of comments.
Yeah. Like most.
Yeah, that was all. I saw a guy who was a salesman in the store, and I was beginning, getting a prescription. It was 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and he had his boss with him. And he was, he was selling stuff at this drugstore. He's a salesman. He sold medications and stuff. And he said, "Oh, this is, by the way, he's another. He doesn't have to work. You know, he employs him. He was in here working. I wasn't in there working.
Yeah.
The prescription.
Right.
So it's, I think it's a prevalent.
It is.
I think it's a good question, though, that we ought to be prepared to answer.
Sure.
Because the average guy out there sees us leading Bible studies and doing evangelism one or two nights a week, and he said, "Well, I can see what your busy evenings, but what do you do all day?"
Mm-hmm.
So I think we ought to be prepared to answer it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that they're just kind of wondering, how we spend our time.
Especially if they're investing in our ministry.
Yeah, that's right.
Special what?
They're giving to us.
Yeah. Maybe he's got even a right to ask the question.
Well, I think the thing that comes in there too is whether I have an office in the home or out of the home. I've gone back and forth on that sort of thing. I don't know, maybe we're trying
to yes.
Talking
about that. Yeah, I'd be interested to hear on that too. Most of the guys I've heard that have gotten them out of the home come back into the home. But maybe that's just the ones I met.
Why? Yeah, I don't know.
Why do you come back?
What? Well, I got evicted from the office.
Didn't pay your bill.
they rented out from underneath it. So I don't know. I feel more productive in the office, and I feel like at some place I go, you know, and I put in the time there. But then, by the same token, as I spend that time in the office, then I feel like, well, man, if I go out in the evening. Then I spent all day in the office, and I'm out in the evening too. You know, and you feel like you get two jobs.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like I can be more productive in the office. I get away, as I tend to, you know, the kids come home. I want to say, hey, how you doing? Talk with them for a few minutes, and I go back downstairs. And I think the guilt there sometimes. Your Betty's here cleaning, you know, vacuuming in here. I'm sitting here, thinking. You know, and he looks in there. What have you done today? Well. No, I thought a lot.
Yeah, I think a lot of people don't feel that they don't see prayer and planning as work.
Yeah.
And so if you say, well, I spend a half a day, you know, praying. I'd like to do that, or I'd like to have appointments with people.
Yeah.
They don't see it as work.
That's right.
Or as legitimate work.
Mm-hmm.
Well, something I think I've noticed with people that have been around the Navigators and have got training and they're out there, is that if they've had no further contact, they do what they've been taught to do, and they don't tend to innovate any at all, because they don't have time to think and plan, and they do exactly what they've been taught to do. I ran into a guy who's a doctor, been around the Navs, he almost came on staff when Dawson died. Well, now he's doing what he learned to do way back then, and he hasn't changed it at all.
Uh-huh.
Well, that planning time, that thinking time is necessary to keep up with the times and to keep up with, and to help those people out there doing the ministry to think and plan for them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think we can't look at it as being, well, it's just unproductive. We've got to help them realize that's part of it. You know, we can't put jobs on them to think and plan so that we can do that.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So it's,
there's a couple things I do in that area of planning. I just come to the thing, coming out of the working world. I do the time study, and everything I do, I try and do it for an audience of one. I don't try and please the Navigator, I don't try and please my neighbors, I just try and please my Lord. And so that's Psalm 139. And if I can look at that thing, and the guy says, what do you do? You know, I asked that question once too, so I did a time study, and I average 59.2 hours a week. What's the point too? It's
the point too.
Just say 60 hours a week. Oh, it's about 60 hours a week. Let's say 59.2 hours a week. They know that guy's done a time study. It's not that kind of stuff that people make the cracks about.
Yeah.
It's the fact that you mow your yard at 2 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I usually just reply to that, well, yeah, I need to do it at 2 o'clock because I work evenings.
Mm-hmm. I think we, like Roger says, we need to answer the question, and we can answer the question. One thing that, we'll get to a little bibliography at the end of the thing, but most people are familiar with Drucker, and he has a nice section there on time studies, and which was very helpful. And as a result of your time study, then you can begin to plan your time. And so it's been pointed out, you need to figure out where your time's going before you decide to plan. And in finding out where your time has been going, you'll probably find three results. One is you'll find things that you ought not to be doing. They don't need to be done. They don't make a contribution. You don't need to be doing them. So that ought to be left behind. The second thing that you'll probably find is that there are things that need to be done, but someone else ought to do them who can do them as well or better than you can. And so delegate. And then the last thing is that you'll find things you need to do, and then you come to putting them into order of priority, and that's where we started the workshop, was how to set up priorities and so the time study is an excellent tool for helping us find out where we are before we try to decide where we go. And of course, as we all mentioned, we can use that to help other people understand what we do and how we spend our time. And it's a legitimate question on their part. the differences in personality, I think we ought to, because not only is it the outsider who has questions that put us under pressure, but it's just association. You know, and the Bible says comparison is dangerous and unproductive, and it is. Because if your boss operates a certain way, and almost invariably we feel we ought to pattern after him in form. Now, the content, yes, in terms of heart, vision, know-how in many ways. But the form, that's where we got to be careful in comparison of if you prefer to start at 4 or 5 or 6 o'clock in the morning. In fact, in my case, it's really been discouraging because almost without exception, I get sick if I get up at 5 o'clock in the morning and have breakfast appointments. And it's humiliating because I can't keep up with the guys. And, of course, that's when some of them are available, as you mentioned. And so I just tell them, well, my day starts at 10 and I work till 10 or 11 at night. And that's my work day. And I do it on an exceptional basis. But I just know what's coming. And so you kind of get ready for it and hope it doesn't happen. But the point is, I cannot handle that. And then there's a couple other factors in that we have 5 people living in our home for training, and our dinners, we ask them to be there at least 4 nights a week. So they're there, and that's part of our work is to spend time with them. We have an awful lot of guests in the evening. We enjoy that. It's part of our ministry. We do it, and it fits right in. And our children then do take sort of a secondary position at dinner. Well, then, in our case, we've decided to have breakfast together. Even though we're beginning to get into school-age children, we still have breakfast together, and as much as it can be, that's family time. And that's really our family meal. And we ask the kids, and we, in fact, I require the kids, and it's a little hard for them to get a hold of, to be out of the house by 8 o'clock. If they are off, it's a day off for them, or they're sick. Of course, if they're sick, they can stay. But if they need to be in the house, come back by 12, fine. If you're really sick, then stay. But the point is, be out of the house from 8 to 12. That house, we need to have some time when it's ours. And we have a lot of traffic, a lot of guests. And that's my schedule. And I can't compare it with you. For one thing, I couldn't keep up with you. Secondly, we just can't handle breakfast appointments and traffic. And for a number of years, Joy and I didn't answer the phone before 12. And the gang knew if they needed to get in, if they let it ring twice and then hang up and then dial again, we'd answer it. Now, our ministry's changed. We're not directly involved with grassroots collegiate ministry, and we don't have that many calls, so we can kind of handle them in the mornings. But it does bother me. I had a call from a staff member the other day, not one of you who are here, who called about 9 o'clock, and we'd had breakfast, and Joy had gotten all her work done, and she was cleaning up upstairs, and I was just getting into prayer, and the staff person called. And now they kind of know our schedule, so that bothers me a little bit. Because I wouldn't think, if I saw Dolores sitting there in the hall or off the side praying, I wouldn't barge up to her and say, now I want to talk to you about my ex that I've got going here. I'd like to get some ideas. I mean, we wouldn't do that. We would not do that, would we? You see Dean and Lynn talking off in the corner with his wife. We realize it's their night off. Would you go to a human restaurant? Would you just kind of walk over there and sit down? I mean, you might say hello. But to sit down and say, you know, boy, here's my prayer letter. Would you read that and critique? We wouldn't do that. Except for lover. But for the phone. And people, it's so selfish and unthoughtful. And I hope we get in the habit of asking not anybody we call, am I interrupting you? Or is this a convenient time for you? I'd be happy to call back at your convenience. Boy, it's... So the difference in our... To be a student of ourselves and to know ourselves well enough as to when can we be productive and how do our responsibilities fit in and how should we spend our time before the Lord. And that's been very helpful and liberating, but we don't ever get away from it totally, do we? We feel the pressures.
I think one of the things that's important too in passing this on to the people that we live with, because I have single gals living with me and that's what I'm working with, but I find that they're very poor stewards of their body and the way mm-hmm. they eat, exercise, and sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm probably especially sensitive to this since I've come close to a breakdown twice.
Mm-hmm.
I drive myself and it's like I don't have any safety belt that says that's too much. And so I really am cautious now, and I found I just have to get a certain amount of sleep. So I'm probably more of a bear on making sure that they get to bed on time and are exercising properly and eating properly. I get these gals, and they've lived on junk food for so long, that's no wonder they don't have energy. But I feel like we have to set a good standard too, or a model. And I used to be the night owl, and I never got tired until finally I crashed. And I've never ever had that capacity since. And so those of you that work at night, I know what it is, because that's when I did it. But boy, you have to be, I think, be careful that you're not setting an example for others to burn the midnight oil, that they're getting proper rest.
They have to get up at 6 or so to work. Yeah, that's a good point.
Well, the thing with inherent balance and out, it doesn't make a difference on when you get up and when you go to bed. I think the thing to shoot for is, well, I should get at least a minimum of so many hours per week. And it doesn't matter what block or what time it comes.
Right.
As long as you put in your 45, 50 hours a week like your neighbors do, it doesn't matter when you get up, when you go to bed. I think that's what you want to shoot for more, is the hours work rather than the pattern.
But I think, see, getting them on a schedule helps them
to
work by priorities, because, see, it's under the tyranny of the urgent. So they're working at night, finishing the Bible study or getting involved in ministry where it may be better organized and planned.
Right.
But they're going to pay for it someday.
It's interesting, too, on that personality thing, just how we work. Like, I read a little blurb from Elizabeth Elliot Leach, is it now, recently? And she said, I, like C.S. Lewis, and I didn't realize the truth of him, a rut. And she just functions and operates better in a rut type thing. And other people, it's got to have more variety and flexibility and change all the time. But she, and apparently reading some of his biographies, discovered that he liked to function too in a pretty normal schedule, pretty rutted thing. And that's where they got their greatest productivity and probably protected their health from too.
Roger?
Most of us seem like we work quite a few evenings, and it's helpful to me to knock off a little early in the afternoon if I'm going to work at night and get maybe about 2 hours with the family, like from 3:30 to 5:30 or 4 to 6. And kids are out of school at that time, and we can do different things. And that's really my family time.
Go out and play basketball or something.
Basketball. Or sometimes the kids got after school activities that I can go watch them, like basketball game or track meet or something like that.
Tremendous.
So that makes me feel good, because then I can go out again at 7 o'clock at night and I can really hit it without feeling guilty, because I've had a couple hours with my family.
Yeah.
Plus, I need about an hour in there to get regrouped and read the paper and so on. I get about an hour to myself and I'm really ready to hit it again.
Yeah. Right. Excellent. All right, that's good.
You know, I said one comment I made in our neighborhood about this working thing. And you know, some of the wives are doing it. You know, I worked 10 years to get a job where I'd be around 11 or more. I really know. Why'd you head up? You know, what'd you say to my wife yesterday?
Because the mentality out there is not family priority. I was talking to one guy in Detroit, and he was considering a move. And the guys in the company were asking, well, why, man, that'd be such a great promotion. Well, I want to see how this will really fit, you know, how it will affect the family. What's that got to do with it? You know, was their reaction.
Yeah.
One thing about this time off during the day business is that it just occurs to me, maybe I'll use this as a comeback in the future too, that some of the more progressive companies are going to flexitime, one word for it, where you know, you set your own hours of work within some limits, I guess. Probably depends on the company, but man, this isn't laziness. This is just we're just doing a modern thing in one sense.
Pamford has it here in town.
Is that right?
So you work your most productive time, and they go.
I think Chuck's concept there of taking the two things he mentioned, I think, are really good on that. Just doing that time study for our own benefit, even if nobody even asks. It just gives you a clear conscience.
Right.
Also, the idea, you know, it is you got to put your own schedule on it. You can feel comfortable working 50 hours a week, and you know that you've done it regardless of when you get up or when you go to bed. I think that's the important thing.
Yeah. You know, the best analogies that Bob pointed out, well, explain, if we had to pick someone in the business world that we are analogous to, it would be the small businessman who has a ma-and-pa operation. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Can you elaborate on that, Bob?
Well, is that what we're talking about, what Chuck mentioned in Deuteronomy 6,
mm-hmm.
in a biblical pattern, you see that the Father is around a lot to instruct in the Word, when they lie down, when they rise up, when you're walking in the way, when you're eating, and so forth. And in our culture, the norm is to, you know, take off pretty early in the morning, get the commuter train, and not come back until dinner time, and you're gone all that time. But a biblical pattern is more like if it's a grocery store or the old shop or whatever, and you've got a house next door or above or behind or something, and there is contact with the family through the day, or the farm, there would be more family unit contact and interaction through the day. And our operation is closer to that.
And we're self-employed.
Yeah.
Our hours are longer or at different times. To me, that really communicates the type, if we had it in the business world, what we'd look at. We have a great deal of freedom in navigators and very little restrictions, I think. We got a lot
mm-hmm.
of privileges.
We said we asked for your name and address, so we could write them up.
Yeah, let's see.
Did write it down my do list.
Does that mean we have to answer?
Well, no, only if it's nor to your priorities.
If you add a thing down there,
knowing Lover and schedule, if he knowing Lover and schedule, if he answers, I know he's not doing things according to priority.
I've decided to say no to filling out surveys.
You said, was it three things? When you're planning, and the first was the do list, and I got involved in all the things that you were doing, and I didn't get back to the outline of what two and three were.
I just do number one until it's done. I don't go on to two. I carry the little memo pad.
Oh, I see. Those. Okay, that was it. I just thought you had three main points, and there were quite a few of them.
No, I was sort of rambling on.
Okay.
Fine. Three main points. I put down eight.
Yeah.
I got 11 on here.
Well, I didn't have 11.
Three of them. I wonder if Sparks could read his helps, your helps list again. I didn't feel like I got it.
Well, basically, a lot of them were counterpoints to the hindrances.
I see.
You know, the planning and scheduling was the most frequently mentioned one. Ideas under that were the idea of monthly, weekly, and daily planning, calendars, do lists, and so forth. These were mainly means to the end, although there were some who had innovative ideas there, like one was deciding annually what percentage of their time will go towards each priority. I would assume, you know, what percent of my time do I want to put in on evangelism, what percent on man-to-man, and so forth. And then scheduling that ahead in blocks of time, taking time to evaluate, and so forth. Prayerful planning was a main thing. Prayer came in there pretty strong. Then the other area most frequently mentioned in the survey was this thing of others. I did refer to the help of others. Scheduling, talking, planning with the wife, the help of other people like an administrative assistant, secretary, just another person who might have gifts in planning. Or I think just the idea of the help of two are better than one, you know, doing it together. Another help was, maybe this would be a good time, or unless I'm premature, of Tyranny of the Urgent, and some other books were mentioned. Another was doing things by twos, which we've already gotten into, having meals and using those for evangelism or man-to-man time, learning to say no on the basis of priorities. I guess two others that I didn't mention were walking in victory. One person just felt that, you know, when they're walking in victory, they're on top. Maybe this relates to the discipline thing. That it wasn't so much the techniques and the little gimmicks that helped, but just walking with the Lord. And then another was to take the time to identify the problem areas and then focus prayer on them until those are answered.
This is a little few books that were suggested by ourselves and those in the last group. we try to limit these to ones we've used and can really recommend. If you have something like that, feel free to mention it now and we'll add it to the list.
I think it's how you control your time in life, late in the book.
Okay.
And that thing is excellent. He has really got some good ideas. He gives examples of everything. He gives examples of businessmen. He gives examples of housewife. He goes in a real broad spectrum of examples.
That's good.
He goes the ABC. Prior to the A, and 1, 2, 3, and 8. He goes. He really has a good one.
A lot of people have recommended that priorities and this pressure is taken by Holly Hendricks given to the staff about 4 years ago. I'm not even sure that's really a...
There's another book out now that's written by Ed Dayton. I forget the name of the other guy. It's called World Vision, called Strategy for Living. They have time management seminars.
Mm-hmm.
Danny Repko attended that seminar not long ago and recommended our last staff meeting. Mm-hmm. We all get that.
Strategy for Living.
Strategy for Living.
Oh, yeah.
They were in Portland. Right. I would have gone to it except we had staff meetings up in
Portland. They put this on. I think it usually costs a pretty good bit of money to go to a seminar, but they put it on for their church at Lake Avenue Congregation in Pasadena and just charge the people $15 a piece.
Mm-hmm. What's the model?
Ed Dayton.
D-A-Y?
D-A-Y-T-O-N. There's another fellow too, and I'm sorry I can't remember his name.
Is that a World Vision?
Engstrom?
Engstrom?
Engstrom or McKenzie?
Yeah, Engstrom is his name. Ted Engstrom.
Is that the guy we went to, Roger? Where did we go to?
We went to Hendricks.
Hendricks. Not Howie, but another one. Huh? Dean?
Hendricks from Johnston.
Uh-huh. What's the name of Dayton's book again?
Strategy for Living.
Dolores, do you know if Rod has a copy of How to Live on 24 Hours a Day? It's an older book, but it's got some neat old concepts in there, like the one I don't know the author of it, but just the idea of balance so that you don't get cranked up real tight. And then, you're aboard everybody because you're mm-hmm. keeping track of your minutes. And then he brings out also in that one the idea of the need for concentration. Mm-hmm. That you'll start to work on something and boy, your mind will go flitting to all kinds of different things. You just need to bring it back and patiently bring it back and patiently bring it back. And some real practical little things in that book.
Mm-hmm. And these two books both have a section or a chapter on it, so you realize they're not the whole book on the subject.
I just read that Spiritual Leadership by Jay Sanders. That's an excellent book. Mm-hmm. Not just on priorities, use of time, but just being a good spiritual leader.
Yeah. It's kind of thing you can keep going back to.
Oh, yeah. That's ought to be must reading for all of us.
That Priorities Amidst Pressure, was that when Howie Hendricks spoke here?
Mm-hmm.
What, mm-hmm. 4 or 5 years
ago? Yeah, the staff conference. All right, now do you have any other comments you'd like to contribute or questions? All right, one final comment before we terminate. And this is more or less a summary. Prior planning with built-in margins and lead time will not only help us to accomplish primary objectives, but we can pick up secondary objectives along the way with very little additional resources expended. It also will allow us to accomplish more than one objective per activity.
Run it through again, please.
Okay.
That was a good
sentence. Did anyone write that
down? Prior planning.
Prior planning with built-in
margins
of time will allow us not only to accomplish primary objectives, but to pick up secondary objectives very little additional expenditure of resources. Who can illustrate that principle?
What do you mean by margins of time?
Well, lead time. Margins or lead time.
Maybe if we're planning for a workshop or whatever, we're on a relaxed schedule somewhat as far as, you know, it's not like it's 10 o'clock tonight, my workshop is tomorrow morning at 8, and I'm still feverishly trying to get it together. But if we've got that more relaxed schedule with those blocks of time in there, then if something comes along where, you know, we see there's an opportunity to go and do a little bit of fundraising, let's say just an appointment with somebody, then we can look at our schedule and say, well, let's see, you know, I can slide my work preparation for that seminar down an hour today because I'm well ahead of schedule, and I can buy that time back later on some other priority, but right now I need to go see this guy about finances.
All right, now that can happen. That wasn't the intent of the statement.
Okay, then I don't understand.
But I appreciate that does allow for that sort of thing, because you do have margins of time for interruptions, and you're just well ahead of the game.
It seems like I spend an awful lot of time many times just sifting through everything I can do, figure out, okay, what I'm going to work on now, so I'll work on that. Where if you've got it prioritized, you get done what you need to get done, and you got the right, I think, system set up, you're just gonna have more time. You don't spend as much time figuring out what to do once you plan the time.
Okay.
Also, whenever we have something that we know is a priority, until we get it done, it's an emotional leap on us. It's that pressure.
Yeah.
And so if you do nothing else but the most important thing during the day, at least that the most important thing has been done, and it gives you an emotional boost rather than an emotional leap. Mm-hmm. So I think you would have more capacity or greater capacity than the longer you put it off, the greater the pressure comes and the more demand.
Okay. That happens too when you fill in margins on ahead.
Nobody's right yet.
Is it the idea that you're going to be speaking over here at this church and you want to, you know, do a little groundwork there for some further ministry with them and help them, minister to them, you felt led of the Lord, that's one you want to accept. And so you're thinking, and you've got your planning done, and you're thinking in advance on it of the time you're going to leave, and that you take this guy with you, that you want to get man-to-man, and you not only speak, but you work him in on his testimony. But on the way, you stop at the gas station, which is nearby the store, where you got to get a new belt anyway, and you go in, and either with the salesman or the gas station guy, you have a chance to share a little witness, and your time is blocked out enough that you're not rushed and hurried, and you can think to take this guy with you, to have him share, to get the natural opportunities of life witness.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. So that you try to accomplish more than one... Pardon me? No, we didn't share it. We didn't share it last time.
You guys were climbed up on it.
Well, this is a new idea.
Oh. Yeah, sorry. All right, if we can accomplish more than one, this is another statement, if you can accomplish more than one objective per activity, you're a lot further ahead than reverse or converse to accomplish, to have to have several activities per objective. All right, now let's say that we had this workshop in our area, and that one of my primary responsibilities was to train Bob and Chuck. And that's far removed from reality, but let's say that's the case. I find the reason they're helping me today is because one of the things I'm concerned in helping these guys on is the use of their time. Or maybe Chuck's is on the use of his time and Bob is on public speaking. And so because I have lead time, I work them into the program, but I don't sacrifice the program have novices get up here and fumble around. We take time to let them rehearse, school them, work them up to it so that they'll be successful, and we'll accomplish the training objective for my primary calling in life is to reproduce reproducers, develop multiplying disciples. That's what I'm doing primarily. I'm also contributing to the NAV work through teaching. So I'm accomplishing at least two objectives in that. And if we wanted to have someone give their testimony, we have a close-in businessman who we want to draw in a little closer. He has a great testimony, and he can really talk from the subject. We know he's good at it. And I school him a little bit to make sure he only holds his testimony to 10 minutes. And we work him in. I've done that before. Let them give their testimony because it's good for them to do that. It's a good experience for him. He has exactly what we need. And he may be a donor or public relations or co-labor with us, and we need to draw him in. So there ought to be, per activity, many objectives. But you can't do it if you haven't had time to think through and make arrangements. I have been driving to a city and get there and get involved, and I just wish so-and-so were with me. And if I had only planned ahead a little further, he wouldn't have been. He could have arranged it. I didn't ask. Or this has happened too. Phone them up and say, hey, I've got a situation here in Detroit. I thought about you. Problem is, it's tonight or tomorrow night. The guy says, love to go. But I can't. So, you see, accomplish more than one objective per activity. And planning far ahead in advance with lead time will allow to pick up secondary objectives with very little additional expenditure or resource. Okay, well, thank you for participating and coming.